From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you on the 7th day of February from the iHotel in Urbana-Champaign at the Crop Management Conference. Coming up this afternoon, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at agmarket.net. Don Day will be here to discuss the weather forecast, and along the way, we'll hear from Josh Linville and Arlen Suderman at StoneX, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. March corn today settled at $6.74, a nickel lower. December down 4 1/4 at $5.93 1/2. The March beans 6 lower at $15.15 1/4. And November at $13.70 1/2, up 3 1/4 cents. And soft red winter wheat down 0.5 cent for the day. Wayne Nelson now joins us from agmarket.net, fresh back from Nashville and the big conference that you folks held down there. Looked like it was a stunning success to me. Did you have a good time?
It was a very good meeting, a lot of good attendees from all over the country, really. Great sharing of ideas and whatever along the way, and just some different thoughts on how other people were looking at things. Some people a little bit positive, some people a little bit negative, but most of all, wanting to put some protection under this market was the theme of the meeting.
Yeah, I suppose that's the insight you're bringing back to us. What kinds of ideas do you have?
Well, good members that we are used to listening to on WIL, Matt Bennett was one of our key speakers, and he liked using some puts below this market to lock in some money that way. So, some puts, sell some calls above it, up and where you're maybe willing to be the seller. But to take us through, especially the report tomorrow and going on and through the spring and the rest of the time that we have to look at pricing insurance money.
Tell me a little bit about what happened in Chicago today and expectations for tomorrow's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate.
Well, we were down most of the day here. We traded both sides in the beans, wheat and corn, but were up for part of the day and down, and everything ended up a little bit on the red side. I think the reactions will be to the degree of cuts to the Argentine corn and bean crop, Todd, as we look at it. The guess is for maybe down 3.5 million metric tons cut in corn from January and 3.2 million metric tons of beans from January for down there. Michael Cordonnier cut 1 million metric tons, but he's already down at 38 million metric tons. And corn, he left the same at 44s. But that's what a lot of the talk is. They said we need something new out of Argentina. We know the story down there, and it is bad. But the story in Brazil is just the opposite of that. They're planting lots more acres. So, as we look back here in the week, the Russian war looks to accelerate a little bit, which might cut some of the exports out of the Black Sea corridor. And we don't know for sure whether they're going to be able to sign that again, because Russia's really been speeding up the war, I guess is how you would say it, and making things a lot worse over there. But all in all, we're looking at the numbers tomorrow, but we don't look for big changes.
Finally, thank you for taking your time again this year to join us at the All Day Ag Outlook. That's coming up in March. And you, Kurt Kimmel, who is part of agmarket.net, was with you in Nashville. And, of course, Matt Bennett, too, will all be there. And we're looking forward to having our conversation at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House.
I'm looking forward to it as always, Todd. I think it's just a great opportunity to get farmers together and exchange some ideas. And, they're going to be able to have some good ideas of what's going on a little better at that point in time after we see this report and see what the weather continues to do in South America.
Hey, thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with agmarket.net. You can join Wayne, Kurt, Matt, and the whole crew that you hear on Illinois Public Media, along with the ag economist from the U of I and a special guest from John Deere. We'll also talk about renewable diesel in depth at the All Day Ag Outlook. It's Tuesday, the 7th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Tickets are just $30. Register today at willag.org. Well, as you know, I'm at the iHotel today, remotely coming to you for the Closing Market Report. A couple of items that are happening. The Premier Cooperative Conference is taking place. This is an appreciation conference for their customer base here across East Central Illinois. And then, of course, the Illinois Crop Management Conference. This is one in a series of conferences that put on by University of Illinois Extension across the state. I'm hosting that one, and we'll talk with some of the crop scientists throughout the week. I'll pick some of those interviews up so that you can listen to them. But today we're going to talk to the folks from Stone Axe that are here with the Premier Cooperative Conference. Both Arlen Suderman, who we'll hear in just a bit, and Josh Linville are with us. Josh is the Vice President of Fertilizer for Stone Axe. Hi, Josh. Thank you for being with us today. Fertilizer has been a really hot topic because it always is, but because of the Ukraine-Russia war and the problems that have ensued across the planet moving fertilizers. Can you tell me what happened? Give me some of the background. Most people will know, but kind of your understanding and perspective of it. Then we'll talk about what the future looks like.
Yeah, this is a situation that actually started back in 2020. The whole Russia-Ukraine situation is just it's a new bullet point on a tremendously long list of things that have happened over the last 2.5 years to get us to where we are today. The Russia-Ukraine situation, when we look at it from the Ukraine point of view, they're a major grain-growing region, so it's very, very important. But for fertilizer, they don't export a whole lot. So it's not quite the game changer that a lot of people thought it would be. Now, Russia is where we need to put our attention to. Russia is a major exporter of phosphate, nitrogens, potash. They have been able to continue to find homes around the world as they have done this invasion of the Ukraine. They have been sending a lot of stuff to places like India, places like Brazil, Latin America. So they've continued to find homes. But now we're starting to see this new surge of troops. You know, they're talking about amassing 500,000 troops on the border. There's the new spring offensive that's going to be coming. And, of course, then you start seeing the West. We're sending more tanks, more high-powered military equipment. It's escalating. And so we need to start looking at it and saying, okay, one of the things we got wrong when they first invaded is thinking we lost all of Russian fertilizer exports. That, of course, did not happen. With this escalation, does that finally come truthful? Do we start to shut them off from the world? You lower global supplies. Now you start looking at a situation where we've seen prices down for quite a while. We might turn that corner and head back north.
What gives you that indication?
That if you look at it, take urea, for example. They export, I believe it's 14% of every ton of urea exported around the world. On the UAN sector, they are approximately one-third. Anhydrous, they are the biggest exporter in the world. Phosphate, potash, they're a major exporter. So if we really want to fight them, obviously we can't fight a direct war with Russia. It's a proxy war that we're fighting with Ukraine. But we can fight an economic war with them. And that's one of the steps that we're kind of fearful of today. One of the things we're watching, because we've allowed the things to go, but if all of a sudden they start taking these actions and we need to step in and say, hey, we need to punish them a little bit further, that is a major part of their economy. Energy in general, and fertilizer plays a large part in it.
As we roll into springtime here in the United States, a few weeks away still, however, as we get closer, producers who are expected to put a lot of corn acres in the ground this year, maybe not having all the fertilizer, particularly nitrogen, on, will be looking at the lower price of N and thinking, hey, is this the time that I should book some, that I should go ahead and buy? However, they will maybe think, I want to wait because the fertilizer companies have a lot of high-priced in storage. I don't know whether that's truly the case, and I want to wait it out. You're telling them maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, at the end of the day, and I understand the want. We always want to hit the absolute low of the fertilizer market. We want to sell the absolute high of the grain markets. That's exactly what we ought to be doing. However, when we look at the amount of volatility that we've seen over the last 2.5 years, it is incredibly difficult to hit those lows and hit those highs. And that's why we take the approach that we do. That's why we talk about it, and we'll talk about it here in a little while in the presentation. Rather than looking at it as each segment individually, look at it as a package. Farming, from my perspective, is a lot like manufacturing. It's inputs and outputs. So rather than trying to hit one side or the other, we ought to be looking at the package of it. And yeah, we've seen prices come off and we want to wait and see prices come off a little bit longer. And I get it. We always want that extra $10, $20, $30 a ton downside. We are not out of the woods yet from a logistical point of view. There are still some struggles out there. You have got a supply chain. With prices coming down, everybody in the supply chain has not wanted to put product in place. Nobody wants to take that loss. So we've got to wonder, okay, if we show up, we wait until whatever, April 1st, we show up on the doorstep with a check in hand, say, hey, I'm ready to buy my fertilizer. We might walk into an office that says, I'll get it ordered for you, but it may take time for it to show up because I wasn't going to take that risk either. This situation in this spring, we are pushing. It is a natural for us to not want to have more conversations. We actually want to shut down, not talk to our supplier. We need to be having a lot more conversations with that retailer. We need to be telling them, I don't want to buy yet, but here's my plans. Here's my wants. Here's when I'm going to want it. We need to give them the information to arm them to have a plan in place so that when we do show up, we're ready to roll.
Hey, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
That's Josh Linville. He is the Vice President of Fertilizer at StoneX. His colleague, Arlen Suderman, is also here on campus at the U of I at the I Hotel. And he is the Chief Agricultural Economist at StoneX. Thank you for being with us. You have a little different take today on the marketplace for those folks who have gathered at the I Hotel with Premier Cooperative. And it's a much broader perspective. It looks at the economy domestically, I suppose, and globally as well.
Yeah, and it really comes down to the connection between commodities and the economy. Obviously, the healthier economy is, the more an economy is growing, the more the demand for commodities. That's going to vary by commodity. Obviously, energy is going to be much more sensitive to economic growth or lack thereof versus food. But even within food demand, we have differences and shifts in preferences of food based on how the economy is doing, either here or overseas. So try to give a big picture. And then central banks have really been, like our Federal Reserve and the equivalents overseas, have really been doing a lot the last few years to shape that money flow in and out of the economies. And that directly impacts commodities as well as currencies impacting trade. So trying to give a more of a big picture macro look at how all that shapes our commodity outlook going forward.
Where do you start?
Well, inflation has everyone's attention. So everyone likes to talk about inflation. It may not be good, but that really gets people's attention. And all the talk was transitory inflation, and I felt like from the very start we had factors of transitory inflation. But there's a reason that we put a lot of stimulus into the economy. That was to stimulate consumer demand. And so be it monetary policy stimulus from the Federal Reserve or fiscal stimulus from the government sending checks to consumers, the bottom line is it works. When we were all at home with COVID and we received a government check, we discovered how fun it is to shop on Amazon. And we went from a service-oriented economy to a goods-oriented economy. Now we're trying to shift back toward a service-oriented economy. Services are very highly dependent upon labor. And right now, we have a shortage of labor. The supply and demand of labor is out of balance. There are various reasons for that. But the bottom line is, right now, we still have about 2 job openings for every person looking for a job. So companies are bidding for employees, bidding to keep employees that they have. And that ends up then creating wage inflation. You can't bring inflation down to 2% mandate that the Fed has without bringing wage inflation down as well. And that means the Fed has a lot more work to do and a lot more pain to inflict on the economy.
Is inflation good for producers and commodities?
Well, there certainly there is a relationship between commodity prices and inflation. We have what we call the StoneX Commodity Index, which is a basket of commodities, includes grain and oil seeds, livestock, includes the energies, includes precious metals, industrial metals, the softs, all of that. And we track that against what we call the 5-year break-even inflation rate, which is the market's perception of what inflation will be over the next 5 years, averaging. And we found about a 0.8 correlation. Bottom line, anything over 0.7 is considered strong correlation. So when the market anticipates inflation, they tend to buy commodities. And when they anticipate recession, they tend to sell commodities. We saw that flip back on about June 17th of this last year. And how does that impact commodities? We see that impacting all the way to the farm gate price. The market manages supply and demand at higher levels when the expectation is inflation. When it's expected to be deflation or recession type of situation, the market manages supply and demand at lower price levels. So it has a big impact.
Tell me about the global economy, where you think it stands. If we're in the midst of inflation in the United States, holding prices up, is that the case on the global stage?
Inflation right now is pretty much a global problem. The only place where we're of significant economy where we're not seeing a lot of inflation yet is in China. I think that's yet to come. Because of their handling of COVID and now opening up, I think inflation is in front of them yet. And so they can end up exporting inflation here in the way of goods, et cetera. Globally, the major economies are all dealing with inflation, some more than others. Europe is probably the hardest hit because it being most impacted by the Ukraine war in its next, you know, right next door to it. But it's really impacting globally.
So the Federal Reserve in this past week raised the interest rate by another quarter point. As you made note, for every job seeker, there are two jobs in the United States. Inflation appears not to be quite under control, domestically, certainly, and internationally. You're telling me it's still in place. Have farmers, analysts, and others misinterpreted the idea that a large crop coming out of Brazil, both corn and soybeans, and potentially big crops in the United States, mean that prices will go lower because we have the artificial lift from inflation?
Yeah, that's an excellent question and perspective. Because we'd anticipate if we have normal weather that we'll start growing our way out of a tight supply situation over the coming year. Not to a big surplus, but growing our way out. So you would expect lower prices. Prior to inflation and what we've gone through, we might anticipate corn going back down to the $4 level, for example. But in the current environment, unless something unforeseen would increase supplies far more than what we anticipate, we would anticipate that bottom to be at a higher level, maybe closer to the $4.75 to $5 level or something like that. So it does tend to elevate things. And, of course, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But, again, because of inflation, the market manages supply at a higher level.
That brings me to input cost. Nitrogen has been high-priced. I talked with your colleague earlier. Josh Linville says, you know, I know you might be waiting for lower prices on N. I'm not sure that's going to happen. So at $4.75, you can't pencil corn.
Yeah, but every farmer loves to plant corn. You know, the interesting thing is that a lot of people say, well, because we're in the United States, we produce most of our fertilizer, we have adequate supplies of natural gas, therefore, we don't have to worry about fertilizer prices like what Europe does or some other parts of the world. But the truth is we're becoming a global market. And there's quite a correlation now between fertilizer prices and natural gas prices in Europe. That's because when natural gas prices are too high to use for fertilizer production in Europe, they import fertilizer from us. When natural gas prices are that high, they also import natural gas in the way of liquefied natural gas. So that raises our prices. So as we chart it out, and I've got a chart in my presentation to show, we need to pay attention to what's happening in Europe, where the war is raising their energy costs, because that leaves us vulnerable to spikes in our fertilizer prices. So while we've seen a big drop and we're all giving a sigh of relief about the drop in fertilizer prices, that doesn't mean it's over. I think that we still have significant commodity price risk in 2023, and energy is the key risk factor that I'm worried about this year. And of course, that goes into fuel costs in addition to fertilizer costs, goes into your crop chemical costs as well. If China truly rebounds from COVID, like they're showing signs they may, that could increase demand for oil by 2 million barrels a day. And we're in a place right now where OPEC is struggling to meet its existing quotas, and the environment in the United States is not favorable for investment in expanding shale oil production. Most of the expansion we've had over the last couple of years is from wells that were started prior to COVID but not completed and now have been completed. So we have a limited ability to expand production in the United States. We are, that's not a forecast, but I'm saying depending on how these economies come back, China and U.S., et cetera, we could see possibility significantly higher oil prices a year from now than what we see now impacting our input costs.
One last thing. So we have a 475 sort of target that you've given us on the bottom side. Still pretty high price, not terrible, but doesn't pencil out for corn if you've got high-priced nitrogen, other fertilizer inputs. And you opened the upside in this last conversation to a real jump. How do producers manage both? Because at one point I'm thinking, well, I need to sell to cover my cost, at least at this point. And I think that's what the agricultural economist at the U of I and many others have been saying for some time. Is that just simply good advice?
And treat your farm like a business. And we've had some good years to grow the equity in a farm. And so we need to protect that equity. And then when we have opportunity, continue to grow it. So that means what does businesses do? They're looking at margins. They're not looking at how high can I sell stuff. They're looking at margins between costs and what they sell things. And so know what your costs are. And when you're forward pricing, see what you can do to forward price your inputs as well. Energy, that may be a little bit easier. Fertilizer, it's a little bit more difficult. Have those conversations with your suppliers. Maybe there's a case where they can bundle the demands of several customers and actually start to hedge the fertilizer costs as well. At the same time, you're hedging your grain costs.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Arlen Suderman is the chief commodities economist at StoneX. We were joined by he and his colleague, Josh Linville, who is the vice president of fertilizer. They both spoke earlier today at the iHotel here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, what do you know?
Over the next week or two, there'll be a lot of active weather across the United States, as we won't be stuck in one particular weather pattern, but the jet stream will be very active, meaning systems will be coming through about every 2 or 3 days, so we won't get locked into one particular pattern, but kind of some ups and downs with temperature and precipitation chances. Speaking of precipitation, a storm system lifting out of the southern plains is going to be spreading rain and thunderstorm activity across parts of Texas and Oklahoma and Arkansas today into Missouri. Then this area of rain will expand northward to cover all of Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and on the northwest areas of this low pressure system in the colder air. There's going to be a fair amount of snow going across central and eastern Iowa, far northern Illinois, parts of the central and southern areas of Wisconsin in the colder air on the backside of this system. But it will be warm enough for rain in the central and eastern areas. There might be a brief changeover to snow as cold air comes in on the backside of it. Then we're going to see that changeable weather pattern. By the time the weekend rolls around, that system will head off to the east. Temperatures will rebound over the weekend into early next week before we see another large storm system likely threatening the Corn Belt with rain again and thunderstorm activity with snow on the northwest side of the low right around Wednesday and Thursday of next week. And that is a pattern that will likely repeat itself with another weather system heading towards the Midwest the weekend after. So precipitation chances are going to look high, and temperatures are going to be fluctuating across not only the Midwest and Corn Belt, but the whole nation.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand at willag.org. And there right now you can register for the All Day Ag Outlook. That's coming up on the 7th day of March. It's not very far away. The cost is just $30, and that includes your morning coffee and a Beef House roll in the morning, the noon hour meal from the Beef House, the farm and agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, the brokers from Will Ag, and we'll hear from John Deere as well. Should be a fantastic day. Oh, and we'll talk about renewable diesel in some detail. All of that at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. Register for the All Day Ag Outlook now, willag.org.